in the studio. I've got June Penn from Kiwis Against Seabed Mining. Good morning, June.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
Oh, I'm enjoying the it's a lovely days at the moment, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. End of summer kind of stuff. Now, Kiwis Against Seabed Mining and everyone else concerned about seabed mining have been presenting to the decision-making committee of the EPA down in New Plymouth in the last week or so. Are there any on today?
Yes, there are. There's still a few people to present. Phil was there the last couple of days, so there was presentations again Wednesday and Thursday.
That's CASM chairperson Phil McCabe.
So most of the Raglan people are Skype this week.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's Skype. Right. John Lawson, our DJ here, said that he was going to be doing his by Skype, which he said wasn't ideal, but what can you do? You might not be able to get down to New Plymouth.
Well, yeah, a lot of people couldn't afford the time and the cost, personal cost to go. So the New Plymouth one was the only one that wasn't in Wellington, and that was last week. So a team of CASM people went down.
Yeah. Mm. And so it's interesting with this because it's an application to do the same thing by the same company as the first ever application to mine the seabed from Trans-Tasman Resources. It's been really easy to compare how things have gone this time with last time. And there have been a steady stream of events that have made life harder for people opposed to seabed mining to the point where it's pretty obvious that there's been a lot of pressure put on the EPA, the Environmental Protection Authority, and it's affecting their impartiality. Mm. You can't have this series of events where they appear to be favouring the submitter and not this many and just sit there and say,
that's
just another mistake.
The way it felt before we went down, particularly regarding the redacted information that we had to go to court at significant cost to get them to uncover.
And then they didn't even release all of it.
Yeah, and then there was a video that didn't release. But that was critical part of the information. They were claiming it was commercially sensitive. When we got hold of it, we realised it clearly wasn't commercially sensitive. It was about the new science or the laboratory testing they'd done about the plume.
So it was just something they didn't want anyone to challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you'd signed the confidentiality agreement. So that happened. And then the analysis of submissions came out and they didn't do a statistical analysis that included the 13,500 online submissions that came from CASM and Greenpeace.
So this was a column in the Chronicle this week from Phil McCabe that anyone who submitted through one of the online forms, they weren't counted as a submission.
They were counted. In the analysis, they were all lumped together under there was third-party submissions.
Now, it's interesting because I think I asked about this in an interview months ago, and you guys didn't think it would happen, but it has been tried on before where people have submitted through a Greenpeace site on a particular issue, and it's all been counted as one submission.
Yeah. So they counted the number of submissions, but they dealt with it in the analysis report as third-party submissions. And, by the way, there was more than 13,000 third-party submissions, more than 13,500, and that they were, mostly opposed, basically.
And so because,
end of story.
Because they didn't include these numbers, they were then able to say that it was kind of a 50-50 split of opposed
based on 262 submissions versus the 13,500. That doesn't look like a fair analysis to me, Aaron.
No, but it's enough that they can then go to the public and say, oh, there was a 50-50 split about it, so we're going to go ahead with it.
Yeah.
And that's how they do their PR, folks. Any little thing, it's worked out dodgily in the background, but if they can do it, then that can justify bringing it to the public as stating as a fact. Mm. And then the news media just puts it all out there, and it's very hard to come back from that. Mm. Very hard to get the real story out there. Yep. So, and this is—I see this time and time again with a lot of different issues. Mm. So, anyway, the thing I did want to talk about—that's one other thing. I didn't even know about that one until I read Phil's article. Is that the chair of the decision-making committee has been quite rude to some people, some submitters, which didn't happen last time, did it?
No, it didn't happen last time. They were much more respectful and open to listening to the public's views. This time around, I mean, it's hard to tell from the transcripts, but being in the room most of the week last week and listening to the volume of submitters, 99.9% of whom were vehemently and opposed, making really good points about why this mining shouldn't go ahead, the behaviour of the chairman was, we were astounded. It was, Oh, yeah, he had asked, and he's repeatedly said to Phil, we want this to be a respectful process and you people will respect this process. So we've tried really hard to be professional and respectful, and everybody that presented followed those lines, followed those rules. And there were some things that happened during the course of the hearing that made me really concerned about how impartial, particularly the chairman, is. He lost his temper a couple of times, and, you know, even threatened to throw one of our submitters out. So, you know, the respect wasn't going both ways. So.
Well, how was that particular submitter behaving? Did he do anything?
Yeah, so let me just start with some high-level points.
Okay.
Because this was an extremely interesting process to sit through, and it was really clear that there was huge public opposition from locals and from people that had travelled around the North Island to be there. All walks of life. There were iwi, there were ex-councillors, there were fishers, there were policemen, there were doctors, there were sustainability groups, there were ordinary concerned citizens. So a really broad spectrum of people. And speaker after speaker was doing oppose. There were a lot of heart-rendering presentations and some people breaking down in tears because of the depth of feeling that they felt
right.
about it. There were many valid points raised by these parties, like actual points on the actual science that attacked the evidence that was in front of them. So they... And a lot of people came up to us as Chasm people at the back of the room, local people especially, and saying, you know, we wouldn't have known about this, and they told the DMC this. Without Chasm, we would not even have known that this was occurring because of the blatant lack of consultation by TTR with the local communities.
So Kiwis Against Seabed Mining is doing the government's job.
With
the consultation issue.
Yeah. When it was all said and done, my impression was that the DMC felt very biased. They displayed a real lack of interest in lay people's concerns. Their main questions for the speakers were around conditions that would make the mining okay. This is where my red flag kept coming up, and I'll read you some of the chairman's actual statements around it. But what that's about is TTR have applied for two consents, the consent to mine and the consent to pollute or discharge really into the environment, and they need both of those consents to make the mining operational. So what they're saying, the company that's applied is saying that they will do the baseline monitoring of what's actually there to validate their guesstimates from the laboratory about the impact on the environment. They'll do that for the first 2 years after they get consent.
So they do the research to see if it was a good idea after they've been given approval.
Yep. So they'll validate their project.
How do they do that with a straight face?
Yeah, how do they do that with a straight face? So you can't measure the impact on an environment that you haven't actually measured yet. So they're guessing about all of these conditions and thresholds in the water.
That is an admission, isn't it? That's an admission that they don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're saying we'll do it afterwards, yep. It means they don't know.
There's a huge gap of information because they haven't really measured what's out there. And they've publicly said it's a desert out there, which is obviously untrue. And there was some very good evidence from lay people that and photographs of reefs and life out there and sponges and Lee Torres, you know, the 68 blue whales that she sighted in the area. And we had fishermen after fishermen sitting on that stand going, I've got a sweet spot right in the middle of that mining area. And I know there's blue cod out there, and blue cod have got they're territorial and they've only got a range of 1 or 2 kilometres. So I don't think they're going to move, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Yes.
And so, but the chairman wasn't interested in lay people.
He listened to the fishermen because the recreational fishers in this country are a big part of the voting public. And
yes.
They have this thing under the Act called an existing interest because
yes.
you're getting kai from the area. And of course, the local communities and the cultural concerns getting kai from the area. So he had to listen to them. But the things that he was saying to them kept coming back to the same question. Which was around, in the event that the consent is granted, we're going to be attaching conditions associated with that consent. If you were satisfied that we could manage the conditions, manage the environmental conditions, not fix them, manage them, would you still have that view? Again and again and again, he asked that question.
And what were people saying? Were they saying, oh, yeah, maybe they're best down to right?
Well, it was a very intimidating process for lay people to be a part of, and some people stuck to their guns and said, no, it's always a bad idea. And some people said, oh, yeah, I could be helpful in looking at the conditions.
And that, but they need someone beside them to say, to give the expert advice that, that when you're creating a sediment plume like that, there is no, and when you dig up up to 11 meters deep depth of the seabed, you dig it up, squish it up, and put it back. You're destroying the local environment, and presumably the cod aren't going to stick around.
No, there will be countless loss of life. They're not worried about the countless loss of life. The only argument is how long it would take to recover, and the experts, and particularly CASM's experts, are putting forward the view that recovery is not the right word, because that benthic environment will not come back to be the same that it was before. Different things will recolonise it, so the whole area won't come back to the way that it is. It can't.
Well, it's like when you, I suppose, when you clear a forest and strip the topsoil off, different plants grow back. Because that's how the environment works. It has to be different plants grow back. They recolonise and try to slowly build it back over tens of thousands of years to a forest. So,
and TTR's benthic experts are saying it will recover. The organisms will move back. They don't know. Maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 100 years. Nobody really knows. It hasn't been done before. So there's all of that kind of scientific argument going on, which is
These are scientists who's... I have to question the whole reliance on experts. And I say this time and again around other issues. I used to work for an architecture firm in Hamilton, and we hired a traffic engineer to give us an opinion about something else, and then a guy at council was this really objectionable guy at Hamilton City Council, an engineer there, and he didn't like it, so he hired an engineer to give an opposite opinion. Just like that.
Who's paying the experts?
And the thing is, they get very upset. Scientists get very upset about their objectivity being challenged. But we're human beings. We're emotional human beings, and we can't help but side with the people who we have a relationship with, especially if they're paying us money.
Yeah, and it depends what
your mortgage.
Especially if we've been paying some money, your mortgage.
Your mortgage depends on it, and you can't help but be affected.
Yeah, and the brief that's given by the DMC to those experts has got limited parameters, so they are only asking certain pointed information.
So even if they want to do the right thing, they can't answer
because they've been given a different brief.
Because it hasn't been asked.
So all of that's happening. So there's huge gaps in TTR's evidence, which are mainly around the cumulative impacts of this activity because of the sediment loads that are already in that environment that are coming from the polluted rivers, right, that end up there. The blatant lack of baseline information about what life's actually out there. The unsound science based on these three samples from that area, and all of the scientific assumptions are being based on...
How many square kilometres?
The area is nearly 66
square kilometres. And they've taken three samples.
Three soil
samples, basically.
So, and all of the assumptions around the flocculation and the size of the plume and what's there in the recovery is based on that, which... in my mind, is unsound science. There was no controls done around that. There was no retesting. I mean...
So flocculation, just for the uninitiated, is when the sediment is released into the ocean, how quickly it groups itself together, joins together and becomes heavy and sinks.
Yes, exactly, and settles.
So this is the same application, but with a new piece of science from last time that actually says, oh no, hold on, actually flocculation happens a lot faster than we first thought.
Yeah, therefore the pollution, the plume, might not go for hundreds of kilometres, it might only go for tens of kilometres. Inshore, by the way, it's going inshore that where it will land up, the plume, so towards the coast.
Yeah, so the whole,
which is where the current will take it. So that's huge, this lab science based on these three samples. There's enormous gaps in the economic analysis. So the benefits and the costs, they just don't weigh up. And by that I mean the economic analysis that TTR put forward did not take account of the costs. It only took account of the operational costs of the project and the profits.
So it only looked at the positive impacts and didn't include the negative impacts.
Exactly. It didn't include costs like the fact that the recreational fishermen won't be able to fish there, the fact that the local economies won't be servicing all of those boats, which is a high fishing area off that coast. So none of the local economy that currently exists because of what people currently do in the area has been taken into account. Tourism hasn't been taken into account. None of that is in the economic analysis. There is no recognition of the value of the natural capital, the marine life and the ecosystem services and functions, is none of that in the economic analysis. It's hugely flawed.
This is what I've said all along, and I'm abandoning any pretense that I'm an objective interviewer here. I live on the coast, and I'm just astounded at how incompetent TTR are. What a stupid idea it is to try and do seabed mining out there when they haven't got a clue what happens.
Yeah.
And investors, steer away from that company.
Yeah. They have organised their information to paint a certain picture, and the role and the job that the submitters have been doing such a good job of is going, excuse me, there's glaring great big holes in this argument that you're putting forward.
Well, it's just one big hole with a few strands across it, really.
Yeah.
The more I look into it, the more that's what I see. Like, it's just...
So the chairman went for quite a few. He didn't like hearing any of this stuff. He gave airtime to people when he thought it was in support, and he closed down people or asked them leading questions when he thought they'd put something up that was a bit damaging. That was what happened. That was what I saw, Aaron.
Were there any journalists there from the national media?
There was a journalist there.
Are they going to do anything about this? Because that is their job.
I hope so. They have to present a balanced viewpoint. I'm not sure, Aaron. I can't answer that question.
When you say they have to present a balanced viewpoint, is what it means is they have to be very careful not to upset people in authority.
Yeah.
Because they'll get it in the neck. They can accuse the submitters who are against seabed mining of all sorts of stuff,
being
misguided.
Yeah.
But they say anything about people in authority, they have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, they do.
So it's nice. It's easier for me to sit here on a community radio station and say the things I think, because really no one important is listening.
So let me give you a sense of what the chairman was saying. He went on a few what I would call raves.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
They're supposed to collect information, and he stopped every now and again and went for a bit of a rave on, you know, from his position of power. So, for example, I'll tell you a legacy that I want to leave, and that's one of applying the law that we are required to apply. Whether we like it or lump it, our sentiments are of no great consequence. So, you know, closing people down, saying, I've got a spiritual connection and blah, you know, our sentiments are of no great consequence. I'm here to apply this narrow piece of law. I couldn't resist a moment from the pulpit when you talked about legacies, because I think that for me is absolutely crucial. I want to leave a legacy of following the law, full stop. Right.
But there's also implications about that people are asking to go around the law.
Yeah, and we're
not. But the law says that they're supposed to assess if there's going to be a negative environmental impact.
It does.
And
he's talked about extraction of the resource. His job is to look at the extraction of the resource as efficiently as possible. And in that context, efficient means quickly and completely.
Is that his job?
So no question of sustainability into the future. This is what he said. No question of sustainability into the future. That is what the Act tells us we've got to do. So how do we meet our obligations here if we're satisfied that the effects on the environment can be managed?
So he's giving a legal interpretation of the Act that says the Environmental Protection Act, that environmental protection is not important. That's essentially what he said.
Well, read into it what you will. These are his exact words. And he kept saying, if you were satisfied that the effects were managed as described in the applicant's evidence, would your view be different? He said that question several times to several submitters who had really good points. And then he kept... That's a leading question, right, Aaron? You know, it's like he's leading these people down this path to go, well, what if... Would you still have the same viewpoint? What if it wasn't as bad as you... Would you change your... You know, would you change your mind? It felt very biased to me, Aaron.
So this could go to court afterwards if
totally.
The decision is...
These are all legal points.
If they approve it.
Yeah.
Because he is talking about his own interpretation of the Act.
Yeah. And, you know, he talked a lot about, in the event that consent is granted, tell me about the conditions.
Now the other thing, actually, this thing about saying, if we can do it safely, mm-hmm. would you be happy for us to go ahead, is like saying, well, we're going to drop a nuclear bomb, but if we can do it safely,
yeah.
are you happy for us to go ahead?
Yeah.
And the same thing with the genetic engineering, they're trying to say that too, we'll proceed with caution.
Yeah.
But like, it's like running across a motorway. How do you do it? You proceed with caution.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
That you can't proceed with caution. It's not possible with this stuff to proceed with caution.
No. So that was the flavour of what was happening and what I was listening to. Then some people said some stuff that was awesome. So people like Karen Pratt and Malibu Hamilton put up some really detailed, well thought through, in reference to all of that information. And what happened was, when they put up, so when it first happened with Karen Pratt, and she'd done such an enormous amount of work and put up slides that showed the life out there in the reef that's close to the area, and did, pointed out such a lot of flaws in TTR's environmental analysis, that the room that was full of local iwi and some chasm people and some other locals, the room broke out into spontaneous applause. This is what the chairman had to say. This is not a theatrical performance, so let's hold off the applause. I've been very tolerant, but my tolerance is pushed. Really, like school teachery, headmastery, I can't emulate his tone, but it was very almost rude. It was rude. And then when Malibu, who put up a really good case and had done it, you know, his own submission, and of course, being Malibu, pointed out where the information gaps were, and particularly in regard to this laboratory analysis, you know, and the rejigging of TTR's, you know, conditions along the way, because they're moving their conditions as submitters put up points. And he came to a very sound conclusion that the experts have also been pulling out gaps in the evidence. And the room broke out into spontaneous applause to that. This is what he said to Malibu. Look, I'm telling people we're not going to have applause here. You will be asked to leave if it continues.
Malibu would be asked to leave if people stopped applauding, as if Malibu's controlling the audience.
Yeah, so come back and ask her. It was like he lost his temper, this chairman. He lost his temper, and it was like he threw his toys out of the cot, which was, I thought, inappropriate for a person in that position. It hasn't happened at the previous two applications that we've been part of.
Yeah.
This man wasn't following his own rules of giving people respect, in my opinion.
So and so Malibu bore the worst of...
Malibu did buy the worst of it.
And for those of you who don't know Malibu, his colour of his skin is brown. He's not a white middle class mainstream guy.
So you could easily underestimate him.
You could be offended. Well, you could also be offended that how dare he be and actually show a lot of expertise in this area.
Yeah, he really knows what he's talking about.
He's a very good researcher. So,
and he's been on some of these himself. I mean, he's a qualified person himself to be able to run these sessions. And
well, yeah, he was. So for instance, the Rangitahi Peninsula development that happened here in Raglan, they had a commission, and there were a couple of people brought in who were commissioners, experts to run the panel. Malibu didn't do that because he was submitting, but he does that sort of thing. Mm. That's what he's qualified to do. Mm. So, he is a real expert in the genuine sense, but he obviously bore the ire of the chair of the decision-making committee on that one.
Yeah, and he brought the experts' opinions and evidence into play and put it really plainly and put it in their face, and the chairman did not like that he did such a good job.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, how dare he do such a good job when he looks like that.
And the other time that we Chasm bore the brunt of the ire of the chairman was, there was another Chasm lady talking on her own behalf, her individual submission, and she put forward the fact that TTR shares were shifted a month before they applied in September last year from a company called TTR Investment Holdings Netherlands Cooperatives to Mr. Alan Eggers, who is the current TTR chairman. Like, that's a fact. It's a matter of public record. Through a security lending law firm to make it look like TTR is 51% New Zealand owned, so they can call it a New Zealand company. But there had been this shareholding movement behind the scenes from overseas ownership, international ownership, to New Zealand ownership, so TTR could apply as a New Zealand company. Right, pretty dodgy, right? And then she asked how EPA will keep them accountable, blah, 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 and she was curious about what was going to happen about that. And the chairman bit on that, of course, because Mr. Eggers is in the room. And, you know, the only question that's material is whether or not the applicant's entitled to make it. And yes, they are. They're entitled to make an application. You can have your views about the system, but, you know, don't personalise it, because she'd mentioned his actual name. Well, she couldn't point that out without mentioning his name, because the shares are in a trust owned by Mr. Eggers' family.
Yeah, yes.
And then Mr. Shaw directed the chairman, Alex Shaw, directed the question to TTR's lawyer, who's also sitting in the room, and asked him if he had any if he wanted to take that issue any further. And the lawyer said, no, sir, they're just further chasm submissions. I give them about that weight. Well, I happened to be near the microphone at the time and I said, just further chasm submissions? Well, the chairman jumped on me and said, blah, 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 you're not at the moment, madam, making a submission and blah, 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 and glared at me, stared me down for a full 5 or 6 seconds.
Like, did you stare back?
Absolutely.
Oh, dear.
So
hold on, who broke the stair first? I got to know.
He did,
yeah.
I wasn't backing down, Aaron.
Well, no, it was because then it was going to become an even bigger thing if he would have realised after a few seconds.
Yeah, so all of that. So that was the temperature of what was happening. It was some very good, very well-researched submissions from the lay people in the community, chasm and locals, and people came from Auckland and out of town and further up north, and some very well thought through and some very heart-rendering submissions, one after the other after the other, opposing this mining day after day.
So can we guess what's going to happen? I mean, he's showing obvious bias.
I think that's obvious bias, isn't it? I mean,
how's that going to affect
the outcome? We're really interested to see. And again, Phil emailed last night and said there were some really good submissions from, you know, some people, you know, some more Raglan people and some people who are affiliated, and they are also making an excellent job of the points that they've got to, that they're putting forward.
So Phil, the chairperson from Kiwis Against CBN Mine, he's still down there observing.
Yep. He's in Wellington. So some in summary, I'd really like to point out that the quality of the submissions from the lay people was excellent. The points that people were pulling out showed a really high level of awareness.
But are they going to be dismissed?
They're on public record. So it's a matter in the chairman's mind of whether or not they fit within his definition of the application of the law.
But see what happened. I come back to the Rangatahi Peninsula development here in Raglan, which was a decision made by a commission set up by council, and the council has actually said whatever the commissioners say we're going to go with, and the commissioners took in all the stuff, they took in all the information. There was no one opposed to Rangatahi who was an expert, right? They brought in expert information, research, and things like that, but the commissioners said, well, we can only listen to experts. And the only experts present were from the development company. So that's the only opinion we can listen to. So they dismissed everything. And this is why I'm angry about this, because I know what it's like. You can hire expert opinion. I've done it. I've done it, and I've watched my opponent do it. You know, because experts are, as much as they try to be objective, they are still human beings.
Yeah.
And money. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, even if you, so say TTR tried to hire a scientist and the scientist came back and said, oh, actually, I think it's a bad idea, they would just fire them and get another one. They would keep doing that until they found a scientist who gave the opinion they wanted.
Exactly.
And that scientist might genuinely believe it. They might have done some research and they think it's really true.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this case, we know that actually what they've done is that they've asked scientists very narrow questions.
Yeah, they have.
So that they can't point out the flaws.
Yeah. And they've limited their time in expert caucusing, we know, where they all get together and point the joint witness statements together, they've limited the time availability to fully explore and debate all the issues and bring out all the points.
Someone should write a book about this particular application, because it is a case study and how to distort public process and democratic process.
It is. It didn't feel democratic in that room to me, Aaron. I didn't feel it at all. I do want to congratulate and thank those people who made that huge effort, because it takes a long time to put a 10 or 15 minute presentation together. You've got to know what you're talking about. So that they put considerable time and effort into writing their submissions. They spent their own money on travelling and took time off work to go. And I listened to a great number of them. We presented, you know, and supported each other as a team. And I've got to say, I'm so proud of those people that travelled from Raglan and from around the country and did their very best to stop this awful thing happening in our ocean. They're awesome. And they are backed by this community, who over the last decade has put so much time and energy to the fighting of the oceans. It made me very proud, and I want to thank this community for their continued and ongoing support for CASM. It's awesome.
All right, well, I've gone over about 17 minutes over, but I really wanted to put that out there. I know that people are very interested in it locally, and it's really important. And you've got some, I'm glad to see some actual quotes and things like that. So we've got the good oil about what's really been happening on there. Yeah. And I'll try and see if I can get this interview put on, get it out of Raglan.
Yeah.
Because
it's good for people.
Someone's got to report it.
Yeah, someone's
It's ridiculous.
Report.
I think I'm the only person.
Yeah.
There's a community radio DJ in Raglan. All right, June, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, as I said, we're going way over time. Hope you enjoyed the morning show today, and I'll catch you again next week.